Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. What's going on, clones? Thank you so much for listening and checking it out. We had three solid interviews today and a ton of takes after a busy, busy weekend of sports. SI's Lee Jenkins was all over the NBA playoffs. You do not want to miss that. Kansas City center fielder Lorenzo Cain had a tremendous conversation with us as well. And Yahoo's Jeff Passan broke down the battle between Baltimore and Boston. And he got in a rep or two before the smack off. Alvy, let's get it. Let's start with the Thunder and the Rockets. Lots of different angles in this game. But let me start with the would-be MVP, Russell Westbrook. After playing another amazing game, notching yet another triple-double, this time in the first half, and losing again to fall behind the Rockets 3-1, Westbrook snapped on a reporter who tried to ask Steven Adams why things go so terribly when Westbrook goes to the bench and whether or not the Rockets get an energy boost when it happens. A perfectly valid question. Nothing out of bounds about that. But before Adams could even respond, Russ jumped that route and let the reporter know he was not having any of that, nor was he going to let any outsider drive a wedge between he and his teammates.
Steven, second time in three games, you guys really struggled when Russell went to the bench. You were out there for part of that. What goes on when he goes to the bench? Why is Houston so successful? And do you sense that they sort of get an energy boost just from him going out of the game?
Hold on, Steven. I don't want nobody to try to split us up. We all one team. Regardless, if I go to the bench, if Steven's on the floor, if I'm off the floor, we in this together. Don't split us up. Don't try to split us up. Don't try to make us go against each other, try to make against Russell and the rest of the guys, Russell against Houston. I don't want to hear that. We in this together. We playing as a team, and that's all that matters. That's it.
Yeah, Russell, I'm not trying to split you up, but twice in three games, you guys have not played well at all when you've gone to the bench.
That's fine.
I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Say, Russell, you ain't played well at all. Say, Russell and the team haven't played well. Don't say when Russell goes out, the team don't play well. It don't matter. We in this together.
That may be, Russell, but I asked Steven a question.
Cool. And it's a legitimate question. Between me and you. Next question.
It's a legitimate question.
Next question. Next question. Next question.
No, I think we're going to keep the microphone. I had a question for Steven. And it wasn't answered. And I don't understand. If Steven wants to say, he still hadn't said anything. If he wants to say, I don't want to answer that, fine. But
next question, please.
Out of my cold, dead hands. Easy, Russ. Look, I get that you're frustrated. But a big reason you're frustrated is because of what that reporter just laid out. He's right. The Thunder are not a threat to anybody with you on the bench. Come to find out, they may not be much of a threat to anybody with you on the floor either. Not down 3-1 in the first round. And of course the opposition gets a jolt of energy when the league's alleged MVP gets a breather. That's no bombshell, nor is that question out of line. That's not some reporter coming out of nowhere and asking you about your family or some other personal issues. That's a pretty obvious basketball question that should have been easily answered, or in the very least, easily deflected. Not to mention, it wasn't even directed at Russ. The question was for Adams, who, had Westbrook let answer it, probably would have done a much better job with it than Russ did. Look, Westbrook's had an amazing season, a historic season. And with Kevin Durant gone, he has really taken it upon himself to be the face of that franchise and to lead from the front, and he's made great strides in that regard. But next questioning a guy and not letting a teammate answer a perfectly valid question is not great leadership. That's not leading from the front. I'd even argue that that's like faux leadership. Look, I get that us against the world thing can provide crazy fuel for someone, but the world's not out to get Russ and the Thunder. In fact, the world is pretty awed by what Russ has accomplished this year. And I don't know that reporter in question, Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman. I don't know him personally, but I think I'm pretty safe in assuming that he didn't think to himself, all right, now, what can I say to Adams to get Russ to snap and drive a wedge between Westbrook and the rest of his team? Look, I'm not here to do a job. I'm not here to write up a game recap. I'm here to sabotage and divide this team. Again, look, there are crappy reporters with their own agenda. Hey, believe me, there are some scumbags in my line of work. I'm the first to admit that. Just like there are scumbags in any line of work that are about the wrong things. But to me, this is not a case of a reporter trying to divide you or your locker room. It's the Rockets trying to beat you, and they're going to, and that's your problem. Not some would-be insurgent in the media who you think wants you to lose and is trying to sabotage you. Of course the Thunder are a lottery team when he goes to the bench. Of course the opposition is happy when it happens. Most obvious thing ever. That's not some reporter trying to divide your team. That's just some dude doing his job and asking a very obvious question. And maybe that's Russ trying to bring his team together. You know, kind of like Fred Hoiberg tried to bring his team together when he said that Isaiah Thomas was palming the ball and getting away with it. I mean, these guys say the wackiest things, don't they, this time of year? Whatever it takes to pull guys together and make them think we have their back. What are your thoughts on that? 1-800-636-8686. Russ is a different dude, to be sure. But to me, that's not a case of anybody trying to divide that team or wreck that locker room. It's just some dude asking a question that's pretty obvious and actually valid. He is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Lee Jenkins is my guest. Lee, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Great. How you doing, Jim?
What's up, bud? You keeping busy?
Yeah, I just felt like I need like a voice disguiser so the Mark and Hollywood references don't come pouring in, but I'm sure they will anyway.
You got it. Well done. All right, so let me start with the Cavaliers, Lee. They finished off their sweep of the Pacers yesterday. On the one hand, it is a sweep. On the other hand, it's not exactly the most convincing sweep you're ever going to see. Where are the Cavaliers as a team right now in your mind?
You know, I still think they're kind of recovering from what happened to them in the last 6 weeks of the regular season. And I think even for them, even a team that has as much confidence as they have, I think they had to be shaken at just how many leads they blew, how abysmal that defense was down the stretch. But then you look at this series, and I was kind of looking back at a year ago. The Detroit series was similar in the first round a year ago. They got tested in individual games by the Pistons, but they still were able to get the sweep. And the Cavs are kind of a weird team. Like through that series last year, that Detroit series, I think some harmony and chemistry came out of the winning. Even if they weren't winning in convincing ways, they were able to sort of build some momentum off of it. And the sweep is so important for them just because, you know, so much is made obviously of LeBron and the workload and his minutes. And to be able to get through a series in four games and get him, you know, all these days off that he's going to have, I think sweeps are more important for them than they are probably for any team in the field.
Lee Jenkins joining us. Lee, let's stay right there for a minute. I mean, LeBron has averaged nearly a triple-double during that series, but at the same time, he played 44 minutes per game. Given that he led the NBA in minutes per game this season and that he's been to the finals six straight years, is there any danger of him wearing out during these playoffs, or is that just not possible?
No, I mean, there's tons of danger. And I mean, this is something that I think a lot of people have thought, you know, for a while that this would catch up to him. And hey, like eventually it will. I mean, he's still only 32. I feel like some of this conversation may have gotten started a little early. It felt like a couple years ago we were even talking about, you know, has his prime ended? Is he sort of starting on the back end? So, you know, he's not like he's an old man yet, but you're right. You look at those minutes. I think what they need, they need Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving to take up some of the stress of those minutes. Because if you watched him in this series, those were high-stress minutes he was playing. And you sensed from him kind of down the stretch yesterday an urgency to close out. And I'm sure what's in the back of his mind is that he needs the days off. Are they going to be able to cruise in the next round? If they can, then the 44 minutes a game probably aren't that big a deal if he only has to play four of them. But if you get into a six- or seven-game haul against a team like Toronto or Milwaukee, well, then, yeah, I think that the minutes will wear him down. And I think a big part of the reason they were able to win the championship last year is that their playoff run just wasn't all that grueling. And part of that was that Kevin Love played great in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Irving came on, of course. He needs a little bit more from them to close out these series quickly because they're going to face now a step up in competition from the Pacers. Price.
We're talking to Lee Jenkins. You know, in terms of that, Lee, you wonder about Blake Griffin and whether or not he might take a shot at a super team. I mean, you might argue, Lee, that he still has a chance to be on a super team right now, but maybe not. He's going to miss the rest of the playoffs. He's got that toe injury. Is it possible that he has played his last game as a Clipper?
It is possible, and it's interesting to think about Harden, I think, when it comes to Griffin, too, because he did get a chance to be a star, but he's also always had, you know, Chris was there and DeAndre was there. So does he want to go spread his wings? Would he want to take, because I think he does like being in L.A., would he want to take a Laker offer and be that guy, like the first guy in, and still get to be in L.A. and have all the opportunities that he likes about L.A.? Or is he at that point in his career where it really is, you know, and everybody will say it's all about, you know, winning in the championships, but is he at that point in his career where he wants to join a team like that? And is it even possible? Like, what team out there? You know, the NBA history kind of shows us there's always a reaction. So there has to be a reaction to Golden State to putting four guys together. But, like, where is that plausible? Where could that happen? Boston, they certainly have the assets. They have the space. They have a coach. But it's hard right now to envision where Blake could go and feel like, okay, we're ready to challenge the Warriors. I just don't know what team out there is like that.
Clones, while I've got your attention, let me get at you about Ferguson. Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Lee Jenkins joining us. We're just running right through it. Lee, when you mention Golden State, you know, they've got a major question mark right now, and it's not just Kevin Durant. It's their head coach, Steve Kerr. He did not coach in Game 3 due to health reasons, and he said that he will not coach in Game 4, and there's a possibility that unless things change, he's not going to coach the rest of the postseason. What was your reaction when you saw that and heard that?
I mean, I wasn't surprised. He's been going through so much for so long, and, you know, he's fought through it. I mean, to get out there and do what he did, even last season, this season, I know that everything kind of looks easy probably for the Warriors, Durant's injury notwithstanding, and I think it kind of is. But for him, it's just been difficult, I think, to get out there on the floor and do what he does. So if they don't have him for an extended period, you know, I think it matters. He's obviously been able to set a tone there and impart a culture that is sort of conducive to Curry and Thompson and the way they play. But I do kind of think that culture is already set. And in some ways, it's self-fulfilling. And when you saw what happened with Luke Walton last year, I think that was the best evidence of it, that Kerr's empowered all these people around him, and his assistants are great. And that team, I'm not going to say it runs on its own, but those guys are – they're just so mature, they're so committed to what they do, and I think in some ways it may give them a cause to play for down the stretch here when everybody kind of knows that they are so loaded they don't really even need a cause.
Before you go, Lee, I've got to get you to shift sports for just 1 minute. For SI's What If Project, you wrote, quote, "On the list of people I blame for the loss of my hometown football team, first comes Dean Spanos, the imbecilic owner who spent 15 years complaining about the Chargers stadium without ever legitimately trying to build a new one. Kelly Holcomb comes second," end quote. Never mind Spanos. Lay that out for me, Lee. Why is Kelly Holcomb number two on your list?
Oh, man. 1997, everything was about Manning and Leaf and who was going to get the first pick, the second pick. The Colts had a game in Minnesota. Harbaugh started. If you were a Charger fan, the Colts had to win that game. They had to win that game for the Chargers to hurdle them and be in position to take Manning. Holcomb came in relief of Harbaugh. Jim, in 15 snaps, he had 5 turnovers. I mean, they should have wrecked a monument for Kelly Holcomb in Indianapolis. 5 turnovers and 15 snaps. Colts go on to lose the game. They get the first pick. They take Manning. Chargers are left with Leaf. But look, knowing Spanos, he probably still would have screwed it up. Or knowing the Mannings, they were so smart, maybe they still would have engineered a deal to get Peyton to Indianapolis like they did with Eli 7 years later.
5 turnovers, Lee, and 15 snaps is not easy to do. Would have, could have, should have, but how much different would life have been if Peyton Manning ended up as a Charger, if in fact his family let him go there?
Probably they have a stadium and we have a team and all's well at La Mirage.
Pat Beverly fined $25,000 by the NBA for confronting an OKC fan. Actually, not a fan, but reportedly the son of one of the Thunder's minority owners. Beverly got knocked down trying to get to the rack and make a layup. He landed near this guy. This guy was ID'd as Stuart Scaramucci, the son of Thunder minority owner Jay Scaramucci. So Beverly jumps up, complaining about the fan as soon as it happened, and then waited until after the game, and then approached him, and they got into it again. And Beverly said, look, I'm fine with fans doing what they do. I'm not fine with a guy F-bombing me to my face.
If the NBA won't or help protect players and situations with fans, I'm okay with the hazing. I'm okay with the boos. I'm okay with the other fans rooting for their team, but I'm not okay with the blatant disrespect while I'm on the ground after a foul and a fan yelling out to me, F you, Patrick Beverly, F you, Patrick Beverly, F you, Patrick Beverly, waving a clapper in my face. I'm not comfortable with that, so if the NBA won't protect the players in that manner, I feel the need as a man, as a grown man who has children, who has morals, to stand up for the right thing. I have to protect myself.
Now, on the one hand, and again, I wasn't there. I want to preface that by saying I wasn't there. I'm going to take him at his word, but I wasn't there. I don't know what was said. Never mind the player. If you're at an NBA game and you're, quote, a grown man with morals and you have kids, you don't want them hearing F-bombs around there anyway, much less in a guy's face. But again, I don't know what was said. But if, in fact, that fan, better yet, the son of one of the owners of the team, and how bad of a look is that? If the son of one of the owners of the team, or even a fan, started dropping F-bombs on Beverly, I could see why he was upset. Because that's not cool. That's not all right. It is difficult at times to know what's fair game and what's not for fans. It's tough to know exactly where the line is. But screaming F you in a guy's face repeatedly is definitely over the line. I mean, I don't know how many times we've covered this, but buying a ticket to a game does not give you license to do that. It doesn't give you free rein. Beverly's right. Boo, talk junk, heckle, ride guys, make as much noise as you want. But you can't get in a guy's grill and F-bomb him repeatedly because you're at a game and you know you're protected, or because your dad owns part of the team. Again, are you going to go up to Pat Beverly or another player on the street and F-bomb him to his face? Probably not. But you'll do it at a game. Why? Because you bought a ticket? The ticket does not give you license to do that. Neither does dad owning part of the team. Now, I understand Pat Beverly can run pretty hot. I understand also that Thunder fan still hates him for the incident with Westbrook a few playoffs back. But again, you can't F-bomb a guy repeatedly to his face. Just as you can't threaten to kill a guy like a Thunder ball boy reportedly did to Beverly as well back in the day. And for a guy like Pat Beverly, if the league doesn't do something about that or protect him from something like that, and he finds himself in that position, you know he's going to take matters into his own hands. He's not the only one. It's a bad confluence of events. A fan holding a ticket, thinking that that allows him to say or do whatever he wants, combined with boos, and that has a fan doing and saying things that that fan would never say or do anywhere else. Again, go to the game, talk some junk. Just don't F-bomb any of the players to their face repeatedly. Because that arena and that ticket does not give you license to do that. Dear Jim, I wouldn't say F you to his face, but I'd say F boy to him. What's good, F boy?
Fat boy!
What you got, F boy?
AD, what's good, baby? Cousins, what's good?
What's good, F boy?
Fat boy,
what's
how
good?
Many you got, baby? What's good, fat boy? Fat boy! Fat
he
boy!
He boards the D Cousins hecklers, Randall WFI in the OC.
Krispy Kreme, fat boy!
Lorenzo Cain is my guest. Lorenzo, nice to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good, bud. I'm great. Let's get caught up. The team is coming off kind of a tough series in Texas where you were swept in four. Obviously, nobody's happy about that, Lorenzo. But at the same time, when you look at the fact that you're only three games out of first and you look around your clubhouse and you see so many vets, the guys you have, are there any signs of panic or even any concern among the players right now?
Nah, I think it's way too early to panic right now. Like I said, we're still in April. You know, we definitely know what we're capable of doing. And we definitely haven't showed up so far. But we got a long season, and I definitely think it's a group that can turn it around.
Yeah, see, it's about the long season, and certainly it's about the group. You and I have talked about your story in the past and the amazing journey to get to where you are as a World Series champion and an All-Star. You're a huge part of the identity of that team the past few years. So how would you describe the culture of the Kansas City Royals?
It's a group of guys that's willing to fight, willing to battle, you know, leave it all on the field each and every night. I know from top to bottom, you know, the people that believe in us, they still trust in us, and they know what we can go out there and do. You know, it's all about just getting it done. You know, we're definitely scuffling, you know, early on. But this is a group that I know they're going to continue to fight, continue to battle through these hard times, and hopefully we'll get it going here soon.
Lorenzo Cain joining us earlier this month against the Astros. You had an amazing catch of a ball that was hit by George Springer in the eighth inning. I mean, when you're sprinting and then you leap into the wall to make a catch like that, what's going through your mind when that happens and you pull that thing back in?
For me, I'm just looking to make a play, you know. I tell everybody that, all my pitchers that, you know, just try to keep it in the ballpark for me. I try to go get it for you. And for me, just being a playmaker out there, you know, I pride myself in just making plays, you know, not letting anything drop. So that's how I play, you know, lights out defense, and I'm going to continue to do that as long as I'm on the field.
You know, if you're the batter, that's got to be tough. But Springer was so impressed. He tipped his helmet to you, and you don't see that very often. What did it mean to you to get that kind of respect from a guy you just robbed?
Yeah, I mean, we all agree, you know, we all understand how hard the game is. And like I say, to go out there and make plays, you know, we try to definitely, you know, respect each other, show each other respect when a great play is made. So, like I say, I really appreciate the hat tip, you know. I talked to him after the game, actually, and he was like, I need to tone down the effort, you know, in late innings like that. So it was definitely an exciting play for me.
I like that. Yeah, tone down the effort. Lorenzo Cain joining us for a few more moments. I know you hit the offseason conditioning really hard, as always, but among other things, you did a combination of pool workouts and sprints to kind of keep your legs ready for the regular season. What are the workouts like, and then what did you get out of those workouts?
You know, just trying to, my trainer, you know, Tim Olderman, we just tried to switch it up, you know, and adding the, you know, swimming pool workouts, just kind of give me, you know, a day, because I go 5 days a week, and just try to give me a day off my legs. You know, I'm getting older now, so, you know, give me a little more break on my legs. And it definitely added a lot more running, which, you know, I wasn't a fan of, but it definitely helped me tremendously. So I'm not a big fan of running, but I feel like it got me in shape. Probably the best shape of my life, you know, just adding more running, you know, more gassers, more 100-yard sprints, and extra pool work. So, like I say, I feel like I'm moving a lot better out there. You know, I'm stealing bags early. I'm running balls down. So, like I say, I think it's something that we'll definitely continue to do as I continue my career.
Lorenzo Cain, my guest. Now, something else in the offseason, I know you hid your baseball gloves, so the kids and the wife could not get to it. When it comes to gloves, how long have you had your gamer? How long do you plan on keeping it?
I think I've had it about 5-6 years now. It's something that, you know, I definitely, you know, don't like anyone to touch, or, you know, not even look at, I guess. You know, I don't want them to even think about touching it. So it's something I put away, you know, for the off season. You know, it only comes out, you know, during the game, you know. It's something I definitely take special care of, because, you know, that's my playmaker. So that's my baby, and I got to take care of her so she can go out there and make plays on a nightly basis.
I love it. You probably don't even want me bringing it up. I was going to say, though, I mean, like, your relationship with the glove, you just kind of answered that for me, but is it just a tool that you use for your job, or is there more to it than that?
No, I would say just job, you know. Like I say, I take care of her, and, you know, she keep making plays. You know, it eventually, hopefully, it'll take care of me. So it's something I take pride in. You know, I definitely love my glove. And like I say, it's this tool I use to, you know, try to go up there and snag every play possible out there in outfield.
How do you take care of her? I mean, is there maintenance to it? Or, like, what do you do with your glove? How do you take care
of
her to treat her right?
Some guys like to grease her up, you know. I got a little, what do I call it? It's kind of like a little glove box for her, you know, kind of protective. You know, so no one can find it, no one can see it. And, you know, just kind of put her away, you know, let her rest for about 3 or 4 months, and bring her out when I get back to spring training.
Nice. I like it. Before you go, I mentioned your family. Earlier this year, you had your son with you on the lap or on your lap during a postgame interview. What's it like to be able to share some of the moments of your career with him?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, like I say, he don't even realize he was born in a World Series. He's been to 2 World Series already, you know, and he don't even have a clue. But it's been awesome, you know. I had him during the first World Series we went to. against the Giants. And like I say, to share that experience with him, you know, it's something I can, you know, look back and, you know, tell him about, and he can see all the pictures that he got a chance to experience, you know, two World Series. And it's just an awesome moment, you know, and that, I try to enjoy my kids as much as possible, you know, on this baseball grind that we're on right now. So love him to death, you know, and just trying to share this ride with him.
Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Davis Webb. And then you've got Notre Dame's DeShone Kizer. He's coming off a 4-8 season. Despite that fact, he might be the first guy off the board, or he might be the fifth guy off the board. But for all the questions surrounding his game and his accuracy and his NFL readiness, the one thing that is not up for debate is this guy's self-confidence, because my man is feeling awfully good about himself. Yeah, and I know that if you don't, who will? But trust me, he does. Quote, "No one else game plans the way I do. No one else prepares the way I do. No one else knows football the way I do. No one else is as big as I am. No one else is as powerful a runner as I am. If I can maximize all my potential in every aspect of the game, this is bold. I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback to ever play." Imagine taking Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body. Why can't I be the greatest? The only thing stopping me from it is me. End quote. Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be the greatest quarterback ever, but that might be the greatest quote ever. Listen to this guy. I mean, do you believe what this guy just said? Imagine taking Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body. That's me. A mind like Brady, preparation like Brady, and a body like Cam. Hey, Deshaun, why stop there? Why stop there? Why not just say a mind like Brady, preparation like Brady, a body like Cam, legs like Russ, an arm like Aaron, a heart like Tebow, the clutch genes of Jeets, the leadership of General Patton, the killer instinct of Jack the Ripper. I mean, my man saying things like this, coming off a 4-8 season. What if you were 500? What the hell would he be saying then? What if you won a bowl game? What would he be saying then? And as you probably imagined, he's getting killed for making these statements. Killed. So when asked about it over the weekend at the Notre Dame spring game, he did what he had to do. You make a statement like that, it's not like anybody's ever going to forget it. You might as well push all your chips right to the center of the table. You might as well go all in. Burn the boats, double down, go in.
You know, when you decide to play a game like this, you're going to try to model yourself after the greats. And I mean, you know, it was a comment that I made, and I'm going to stand by it. You know, those are the people that I want to get to. I think that I am pretty confident one size with, you know, one of the best in the league. And I would love to have the preparation and to exhibit the intellect that a guy like, you know, Tom Brady does. And so for me, why play this game if you don't want to go out there and be the greatest? And that's kind of my mindset behind this whole process and how it always will be moving forward.
Yeah, you should want to be the greatest. You should want to be the greatest. You just don't need to tell everybody that you're going to be the greatest. You just don't want to start comparing yourself not only to Brady and to Cam Newton, an MVP and a Hall of Famer, but comparing both those guys all rolled into one. I mean, in a way, you almost got to tip your cap to the kid, because he's never going to shake that quote. That quote will never go away. Not now, not next year, not ever. Not when he's going to carry a clipboard and drink from a hose or a fire hydrant. Why dial it back right now? My man, feed the beast. Look right into the camera and talk to your future employers. Tell them you're not a cat or a dog. You're a lion. Tell them that your weaknesses are your strengths, because you have no weaknesses. Tell them you're the first guy in and the last guy out. Tell them nobody gives 110% like you do, because you don't give 110, you give 120. No, you give 200. No, 2,000. 2 million. You give 2 billion%. 2 trillion%. Infinity percent. Infinity times 2%. I'm going to stand by it. You should have stared right into the camera. Right into the cameraman's soul, in fact. Grabbed a pigskin and chucked it right out of the stadium altogether. You know, man's game. Yeah, I've got nothing against DeShone Kizer. Good kid, good quarterback. Good chance to be a nice pro. But my man, you are now all in. A mind like Brady and a body like Cam. It's a hell of a lot of red meat you just threw out there. So now that you've put that bullseye on your back, you may as well embrace it. And hope that you get an opportunity to back that all up, because there's no walking back a statement like that. No walking any of that back. You'll never get that back. May as well just go all in. Jeff Passan is my guest. Jeff, it's awesome to have you back. What's going on? How are you?
Jimmy, my friend, it has been too long.
It has been way too long. What's up, Jeff? How are things? How you living? What's going on? What's on your mind?
I'm living the dream, man. How have you been?
So good. Everything's great. Lots to talk about. It's a good season. The show is great, so let's get right at it because you always make it better. The big news of the weekend, Jeff, came from the Red Sox and Orioles. Let's go back to Friday night. What did you make of Manny Machado's slide into second base that injured Dustin Pedroia? Was it a dirty slide?
You know, I've called around and tried to talk with as many people as I can about this because slides like this always create a diversity of opinion. You can look at the replay and try to adjudicate the intent, but you never really know what exactly a guy like Manny Machado was thinking. The general consensus is that even if he has been a guy who's been involved with a number of incidents in the past, that this was benign. It was not a smart slide to make. It really wasn't all that clean a slide, frankly, either, but it wasn't something that was intended to injure Dustin Pedroia. And you could see Manny Machado pop up immediately and be apologetic about it. I think he was contrite after the game as well, and I think Dustin Pedroia saw that. But the problem is that the culture in Major League Baseball says that no matter the intent, if damage is done, then there needs to be retribution and repercussions, and we saw that yesterday.
And there was that. Jeff Passan joining us. All right, so what about the retribution? We saw Matt Barnes throw behind Machado's head. Barnes said, quote, "Jeff, I would never contentionally throw at someone's head or intentionally throw at someone's head. That's kind of a line you don't cross." His manager, John Farrell, said, quote, "He was trying to take a four-seamer in and above his hands, and the pitch got away from him," end quote. When you look, Jeff, at where the catcher set up, do you buy that at all?
Christian Vasquez literally jumps to the outside corner before Matt Barnes throws that pitch. So the fact that John Farrell would spit that weak garbage is frankly beneath him. And I'm surprised that he even tried to do that. And that makes me wonder, where exactly did this come from? Because Dustin Pedroia was inside of the Red Sox dugout talking with Manny Machado after the incident, saying, "It wasn't me." He was pulling like a Shaggy in the situation. No, it wasn't me. And he was apologizing to him for it. So either Matt Barnes made this decision on his own, trying to stick up for Dustin Pedroia, the longest tenured Red Sox player by a half decade, a guy who's really well respected inside that clubhouse, or he was told by somebody above him, whether it is a manager, a pitching coach, somebody in the front office, whoever it may be, that we need to retaliate here. And there is a huge problem in my mind in Major League Baseball when this is the norm. Manny Machado is one of the 10 best players in baseball. You could argue he's one of the 5 best. The idea that you are running the risk of losing him long-term, permanently even, if you hit him in the wrong spot in the head, all because he may have accidentally spiked Dustin Pedroia and put him out for a few days, seems like the most ridiculous overreaction possible. And I understand there are people out there who are saying, let the players police the game. I'm sorry, you don't need to be policing unwritten rules when those unwritten rules don't need to be there in the first place.
Jeff Passan.
All of this stems from the machismo in baseball and the idea that the sport needs to be run a certain way. It's stupid. It's antiquated. It needs to go. Matt Barnes needs to be suspended for 20 games. so that Major League Baseball and the Players Association can say, we're not going to deal with this garbage anymore.
You know, Jeff, there's probably 10 or 12 things I could ask you about, but before I let you go, I want to take one step back and address one of the more important issues facing baseball right now, maybe even more important than this our antiquated or arcane code. And that's, where do you come out as ketchup as a condiment, or on ketchup as a condiment for hot dogs? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm glad you asked this. And you know what? I had no idea that you were going to, but you will be able to tell the passion which I bring to this subject. And I'm going to bring it to the SmackDown this summer as well. You know who eats ketchup on hot dogs? Children. If you are an adult and you are eating ketchup on a hot dog, you belong in preschool, you belong in elementary school, you sit there watching Pokemon every day, you are an embarrassment to society. Hot dogs are meant to be covered with mustard because mustard is an adult condiment. If you want to cover it with, grilled onions, that's perfectly fine. If you want to wrap it in bacon, I'm down with that. If you eat ketchup on a hot dog, you need to send yourself to rehabilitation and learn that food is meant to be consumed with the right things, and ketchup is not one of them. Ketchup is okay with French fries. Ketchup is even okay on a hamburger. Ketchup on anything else is an abomination.
You know, it's a fascinating theory or a concept. Why is ketchup on a hot dog so juvenile, but it's okay on a hamburger?
Jim, listen, I'm not a food scientist. However, I'm going to bring some food knowledge here. The savoriness of a hamburger is cut into by the sweetness of the ketchup. A hot dog, however, is an inherently sweet tubed meat. And so when you are adding sweetness on top of sweetness, you might as well just eat a candy bar. You need to use the acidity in the mustard to cut through the sweetness of the hot dog. It's just a fact, man. It's just a fact. You know what? It would not shock me at all if Cal in Vegas put ketchup on his hot dogs.
No, I think it would not. And just as it doesn't shock me at all that you were able to break down the acidity of the food and in fact, describe why ketchup works on a hamburger, not a hot dog. You say you're not a food scientist, Jeff, but in fact, that's exactly what you are. Now, you mentioned the Smack Off. It is coming up this summer. You're obviously killing it on the baseball beat. Have you put in any time, and I think you have based on your answer, have you put in any time to thinking about your Smack-Off call, or is the plan just to grab a bat from the rack that day and just go to work?
Jim, I don't need time.
Just like that. I don't need time. Jeff.
That's it.
Okay, that's it.
I just want to make sure we didn't lose the call.
That was just the answer. All right.
I'm coming in that day blind, man.
You got it.
I know there are going to be a lot of scripts written that day. And I know people are going to be setting up their answers and trying to talk. I mean, listen, I know that people are going to be coming at me that day. And I'm fine with that. I'm secure with that. I'm good with that because you know what? I'm still the best. I'm still the best, man.
Jeff Passan.
I'm going to come in first time, win the damn thing, and retire right there.
The Celtics were on the verge of looking like maybe the worst number one seed ever. On the verge of getting rolled by number 8 in Chicago. But then the Bulls lose Rajon Rondo, and then they come home where they proceed to lose a couple in a row, and suddenly now they're in big trouble against the Celtics. That series tied up 2 games apiece. So as I said, if you're Bulls head coach, Fred Hoiberg, what do you do in that situation? What kind of adjustments do you make in that situation? What do? You blame the refs, of course. My man Fred admits that Isaiah Thomas is a great player, but he's even better when the refs let him get away with carrying the ball.
Isaiah Thomas is a hell of a player, an unbelievable competitor. He's a warrior, everything he's going through right now. He had a hell of a game tonight. But when you're allowed to discontinue your dribble on every possession, he is impossible to guard. He's impossible to guard when you're able to put your hand underneath the ball and take 2 or 3 steps and put it back down. It's impossible to guard him in those situations.
I see you working, Mayor. I see you working. Nothing subtle about that. This guy's a hell of a player. It's amazing what he's going through right now and the fact that he's still out there and he's balling the way he is. But let me tell you something. The guy cheats every time he picks up his handle or goes to dribble the ball, and he's impossible to guard. Impossible to guard when they let him do that. I see you working, Mayor. I love Fred Hoiberg. In fact, if I were in his shoes, up 2-0, coming home with a chance to finish, only to see them do you twice in a row on your home floor, I might say and do the same thing. But the fact is, this is not about Thomas carrying the ball. It's about his team, Fred's, being in position to choke out the top seed, only to see Boston storm right back and take control of that series again. That's what that's about. Of course Thomas carries the ball. Of course he gets away with it. But that's not the reason they lost 2 games in a row. Your inability to replace Rondo is the reason you're in the position you're in right now. That series changed right when Rondo went down, not when Thomas started palming the ball, because he's always done that. He himself admits that.
I mean, that's not the reason why I'm an impossible cover, but I mean, it is what it is. It's not that funny. But I don't know. I mean, I guess he's going to just keep saying it. But I mean, I've been dribbling that way my whole life. So, I mean, I don't know what to say to that.
Fred Hoiberg's doing what all coaches do. He's trying to get an edge with the refs as it's all slipping away, while at the same time letting his team know he's got their back and he hasn't lost confidence in them. But Thomas getting away with carrying the ball is not the reason they're in that position. Losing Rondo and not having anybody else step up in his absence is the reason they're in that position. That's when that series changed. You know, and you might make the point that if that's the case, why did Fred Hoiberg not make that point earlier in the series? Fred would say, I did. I have. I've been telling the refs, and the refs told me they'd watch it, and they're not doing anything about it. So I'm saying it right now. You're saying it right now, but you didn't say it publicly when you're up 2-0. So that's really not the issue. He's trying to get any edge he can. He's trying to rally his team. You know, and I'm sure you Thunder fans would say, right, Rome, just like Russ is. I'm just saying it's neither here nor there with either one of them. This is not why the Bulls lost 2 games in a row at home. Because Thomas is, quote, carrying the ball. Of course he's carrying the ball. He and a lot of other guys do that. And sometimes it's called, and sometimes it's not. But that's not why they're in the position they're in right now. Fred's kind of reaching for straws here, isn't he? Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Now do what you do. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, trust the podcast, and then check back here tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We will see you then.
Next question.